came down one weekend, went to Lickety Split. Lynn Breedlove's bike messenger company said, So, do you need bike messengers? And Lanny was like, yeah, sure. Move down here. I don't know. Or come down here and we'll give you something. If you've ever heard Lynn, that is just what they sound like.
That was photographer Chloe Sherman. I'm Jeff, and this is Storied San Francisco, a podcast all about the artists, activists, and small businesses that make this city unlike any other. In this episode, we meet Chloe and hear all about her early life. She was born in New York City, but her family moved to Chicago, where they lived until she was 5. Then her parents took Chloe and her brother to Portland, Oregon, where she lived until just after high school. We end this episode with Chloe's story of moving to San Francisco and finding her people in the 1990s dyke scene in the city. Here's Chloe.
I was born in New York. I very much identify to East Coast, an East Coast kind of aesthetic. Mm-hmm. However, since I was born in New York, we spent some time there.
In the city or?
In the city. My mom and her mother and possibly even not her grandmother, but we're all New Yorkers, born and raised. My mom never left basically Manhattan other than to go to the beach on Long Island for most of her life until we were born.
Okay.
And shortly after, you know, after she met my dad, who is the same situation, but Chicago.
Oh.
Two generations.
Second city.
Born and raised Chicago. So they were deeply rooted in both, respectively, New York and Chicago.
Okay.
Where they brought my brother and I up. Earlier in New York, and then when we were in grade school, we moved to Chicago. So kind of being immersed in and raised by our aunts in each town and grandparents. And eventually, since it was the 70s by then, my kind of progressive, somewhat hippie parents wanted to head west.
Okay. Can you quickly, how did they meet?
So they met, my dad was at NYU. And my mom was, I think, at the time, at City College, New York City College.
SUNY.
Yeah. C-U-N-Y, City, whatever, however that acronym is. And I think they met at a party.
Oh, good.
And one of the, you know, so they, yeah, and that was that. I basically met and I think got together and they're together to this day.
Amazing. Mine
from
too.
Yeah.
It feels rare still, but.
It's kind of rare.
Yeah.
It's kind of rare. And that was, 1960, probably 7.
Okay.
So.
Were they already hippies?
They were not, I don't think.
Okay.
You know, good question. A little bit. I take it back.
There's some research for you to do later.
A little bit. I'm thinking about, you're right, because that was the depth, you know, the heart
that
of
was
the
right
hippie times.
When it happened. Yeah, and I'm like...
I would say yes, but they weren't as hippie as some. So my dearest friend Tanya, her parents, New York and Chicago.
Okay.
The Jews.
Yeah.
The same thing. And they went to settle and form a commune in Canada. So they were hardcore.
That's dope. I'm into that. That's super rad.
Where she grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And so my parents less so. But, you know, they were very progressive.
Yeah.
Once my brother and I were born, we ate only sprouted alfalfa sprouts and homemade bread every morning and nothing processed, nothing purchased. So
pretty serious.
She was pretty serious. I guess I would say.
Kind of thing. Yeah. That's great.
They reluctantly agreed to bother with a wedding.
Yeah.
Which they were a little bit anti-establishment for that.
Right.
But kind of for some family, they went and...
In Chicago or
in New York?
New York.
Yeah, my mom, there's a beautiful photo of her in this gorgeous Mexican wedding dress that a store in the Lower East Side loaned her if they could take a photo of her in it and use it as their display photo to sell the dress or something.
I love
it. She went and got married in the park, some photos in the park and probably City Hall or something.
Yeah. Okay.
Had some family there and then returned the dress.
Oh, right.
And that was that.
Okay.
They did not make a big production. They were that level of kind of like, we don't want to bother. They didn't want to waste money. They were
right.
kind of anti, you know, the status quo.
Okay. I love it. And then so Chicago,
from Chicago,
and then
they brought us west to Portland.
Okay.
Where we spent, you know, later elementary, mostly middle and high school.
Okay. Do you remember Chicago at all?
Like, yes, very much.
So you were old enough at the time of that move that you remembered Chicago a little bit. And
yes,
then,
very much related to and identified with being from Chicago, and spent a lot of time, you know, probably 3 times a year I would go back.
After
and,
y'all moved, yeah. What, were you cool with the move? Like, what did you think of Portland?
Portland took, it was okay. I'm a city kid.
Mm-hmm.
It took some getting used to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Chicago, we grew up inner city. It was the north side at the time. Mm. Now it's pretty bougie. But the north side at the time was, like, mixed and mostly, it was similar to the Mission. It was a lot of Latin. It was kind of a Latin and other Latin neighborhood for the most part. A lot of bodegas and, not shave ice, but we called it, it was these ice delicious, what are they called?
Snowballs.
No, you go, it was these, Italian ice.
Italian
so it was also
ice.
Italian.
Oh,
you go
yeah.
all these yes. storefronts that open in the hot evenings and
stuff.
Families walk down and you get an Italian ice at the storefront and sit outside.
Love it.
On the scorching sidewalk as the sun's finally set.
Mm-hmm.
So Portland was a very different vibe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chicago, you lock the door, your stuff's stolen all the time, cars are broken into, houses are broken into, your bike's taken out from under you. Just vivid memories of having everything stolen all the time.
Yeah.
And Portland, we got there, and it's, you know, this, it was like the absolute felt like the countryside.
Yeah.
Like nobody locked their door. People didn't even close their doors.
Oh, wow.
It was a free, you know, it's beautiful. It was green
it is
and, you know, very new level of you know, hippie West Coast Portland.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
I had never seen before.
Yeah.
But I liked it. Of course, you know, made friends. We had a great life there. Good people, good friends that we really are the people who... They were critical years. So, you know, middle school and high school, the friends that I made were significant.
Yeah,
many, some of who I'm still in touch with.
Oh, good.
But for many years, my brother and I went back a lot. And then we he went to college on the East Coast.
He's a little older.
He's older.
Three years older. Okay.
And I went to college initially on the East Coast as well, because I just thought, I want to go back. I always have wanted to go back. Mm-hmm. This is where... what I kind of deep core cellular familiarity is.
And it felt more like home.
It did until I went.
Oh.
So I went back and I was suddenly realized, I think I'm a West Coaster.
Okay. Wow. maybe they got you early enough.
They got me early enough. Yeah. And,
this is
I
like
went.
late '80s, early '90s.
It was late '80s.
Late '80s. Okay.
So I graduated high school '87. So for those first few years, I went to Connecticut. I tried in Boston. For some reason, I didn't end up in New York or Chicago. Just happened to be a school choice.
Mm-hmm.
And each city, I was just felt like this is no longer... Like, I really like the West. And I like the you know, values. It felt a little bit less material, a little more kind of... there was just something that I had... grown accustomed to that felt very less accessible at that point on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm much more of a cooperative person than a competitive person. So I'm like, San Francisco is like perfect.
Yeah.
And I think there's a little bit of Portland has that too. That sort of like, let's all do the thing.
Oh,
or
very
do whatever.
Much so.
Yeah.
Very, it was very, and remains very DIY and kind of lots of, it's easy to live in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I don't know so much. I haven't lived there in a long time, and a lot has changed. As happens with cities and towns.
Yeah.
But it was a lot. You know, you get a lot more, this will end up segueing us into San Francisco, but
okay.
ability to be collective and communal in places that are more affordable.
Yes.
Can I throw in activist too? Yes, an activist.
Both cities, San Francisco and Portland, have that going.
For sure. And I'm sure New York too. I mean,
Definitely. But
like Manhattan, of course.
But being able to, like you said, affordably.
Yeah, live affordably. And you get, because what that brings is a little extra time on people's hands, a little like youth who might want to come to a city and are not professionals yet. Mm-hmm. They're on either a minimum wage or, you know, whatever kind of working wage.
Right.
People who are less, again, with professionals, when you have upped your game a bit in life, if you choose that path to be a professional, whatever you've chosen to be, it consumes a lot more of your time compared to clock in, clock out, or I'm at a grocery store and then I'm off work and I'm done. So it's a combination, affordability, youth, all those things create a easier maybe ability or interest in being, in joining forces, you know, and being communal.
I agree with that 100%.
Or being an activist or being, you know, DIY.
Yes.
In whatever you're doing.
So you tried to go to school in the Northeast.
I tried, yeah.
And then you're like...
I kind of tried once. I tried two different schools.
Okay.
Both of which they both never connected to. They're a little bit Ivy League.
Oh, okay.
So it was a number of things that were not quite working for me.
Mm-hmm. So you came back to Portland?
I came back to Portland and went to San Francisco, Portland State.
Okay.
Took classes here and there briefly and then came to San Francisco one weekend. After reading, so zine, as far as this was, you know, really back when zines were kind of it.
Like, oh, yeah.
You know, no, I've said this all the time in interviews, there was no social media, there was no phones, there was no, so we'd go to Powell's, kind of scour photo books or find a zine.
And
or,
as far as making zines, there was Kinko's.
And there was Kinko's,
dude.
Yeah, that was it. Yes. Zines and flyers was yep. were yep. Kinko's.
And if you knew someone who worked at Kinko's, wow.
Score. Yeah.
Totally.
Was also before the counter. Do you remember that?
Yes.
They had counters so you could hand count.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
like, loosely.
Just like an honor system kind
yeah,
of
Yeah, honor
thing.
System. It's like, yeah, I pretty much had 20 copies.
It's mind-blowing now.
Yeah,
but,
right.
So I was going to ask, like, in high school and maybe some of these early post-high school years, what kind of things were you into?
High school, I went to Performing Arts High School.
Okay.
I went to two different high schools in Portland. So I went from a high school in my public high school in my neighborhood, which was a great high school. But we were allowed to kind of bus over part half of the day to any high school we wanted to attend whatever they might offer.
That's amazing.
It was
actually very
cool. Portland has a really interesting school system, or at least then. So I would bus for a while to Jefferson High School on the north side for dance.
Okay.
And performance. And eventually I was like, why am I busing? This is all I want to do. So I switched.
To full-time
and then graduated
Jefferson.
From there.
Okay.
From Jefferson.
Okay. And specific.
Performing arts, which was like the fame. It was fame.
Okay, yeah.
Literally. I mean, we would just wear our dance clothes all day to class.
Amazing.
And then go to dance class, and then go to math class, and then go back to dance class. So,
great. And so when you graduated, did you want to pursue dance? Or
so, somewhat. But I knew I didn't want to be... So, coming from pretty serious dance, dance program, people were either going professional... Or finding something else, or dappling in it. But it was clear that if you wanted to go to professional, if you wanted to be professional, you go to New York, do it.
Yeah.
Then was the time to follow through quickly.
Yep.
And I somehow knew I did not want to do that. I had other interests, and so I knew I wanted to go to college. I knew I wanted a university for, you know, some kind of experience, like not move to New York and struggle to be a professional dancer, and I wasn't good enough. It wasn't all I ever wanted to do. I knew, so I did not pursue that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in the forefront of my what's next plan.
Right. And you mentioned off mic, if you want to talk about it at all, that you at least sang in one band. Was music big for you?
No, it wasn't.
It was just a thing.
Yeah. You know, we did a lot. We didn't have a phone. And my family did a lot together. We did, you know, my parents were avid athletes and outdoors people. So we would backpack and ski and do things every weekend together. Yeah. But also, after school, if I wasn't in dance class or rehearsals, I was, you know, weekends, it was like other, you know, off weekends or home weekends, I was like, sure, what are my friends doing? I'll join in. Mm-hmm. At one point, I had a band with a few friends, or was participated in a band. I'm not going to say I had a band.
You were in there. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so we would go to their basement and play. And
did you ever do shows?
No.
Okay.
It's entirely possible we did a show in someone's living room.
It I was going to
say vaguely rings
home.
A bell.
Yeah.
But nothing
yeah.
big.
Yeah.
There was plenty of that. You know, there's plenty of music happening, but that wasn't my kind of shtick.
Okay. So as you're kind of working your way through some years of college, were you figuring stuff out as far as like interests and what you wanted to do?
Yeah. So, I mean, I loved art. I loved language. I loved travel. So I was also doing photography then.
Okay.
I took a photo class at PNCA. My dad had done quite a bit of photography, and, you know, so I think I was using one of his old cameras, and I always loved photography, so that was becoming a more prominent, like, artistic vein.
Okay. Somewhere around, like, 21-ish for you,
2021? Yeah, 1920, somewhere in there. I think I even, maybe in high school, took summer photography classes and things.
Okay.
So it was vignetting through my formative years for a long time.
All right.
By the time I made it to San Francisco.
That's another chapter of your origin story. Like, we've been talking about your origin story, by the
right.
way. When did the photos start?
When did the photos start,
yes. Okay. Okay, so then...
So from Portland, found the zine, found Hothead Paisan, found Mudflap, which was Greta, and I never remember her last name, a bike messenger here, San Francisco bike messenger.
Okay.
Great zine. And it took place in San Francisco, and found a book by Della Grace called Love Bites, a photo book.
Mm-hmm.
So all these kind of interests were leading me and pointing to San Francisco.
Okay.
One weekend, I came down to, I had been then, okay, so hanging around Portland, got a bike messenger job, was like, you know what, I'm going to check out San Francisco, and if I can get a job down there, bike messengering, I'll move.
So it was drawing you in.
It was drawing
through
me
the zines
in through the zines
that you would find at Powell's mostly.
Yeah,
I love this.
And
so great.
Came down one weekend, went to Lickety Split.
Mm.
Lynn Breedlove's bike messenger company said, "So, do you need bike messengers?" And Lanny was like, "Yeah, sure. Move down here. I don't know. Or come down here and we'll give you something." If you've ever heard Lynn, that is just what they sound like. And so I came down. I didn't end up at Lickety Split. I ended up at like Pronto or something. I don't even remember.
Another
bike messenger, which lasted like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Before I realized San Francisco is like instant death if you're not a pro bike messenger. It was horrifying.
Right.
I was used to Portland that I could manage. It was a lot easier. It was just overwhelming. And they're like professional bike messengers, right? So I'm like this little kid not like showing up to town naively.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys had been doing it for years.
Yeah.
And it was intense.
Also, for anyone who maybe arrived in San Francisco after, I'm just going to throw out a year, like 2010, 2012, never know the culture.
Like, it was a culture.
Bike messenger culture.
So deeply
intense.
Rooted in
it's
the city.
It's still weird for me to go by, I don't know what it's called, but that plaza on Market.
Oh, yeah.
And
there's
no bike messengers
there.
Weird. I'm like, what the hell
there
happened?
There were like hundreds. It was the hangout. It was just where you wait
like
for
the...
your next radio assignment.
It was like one of those things. It went with the first you know, computer wave and then the dot-com wave and then all the
yeah,
other.
It went that's right.
With all those things.
They were essential to downtown. Because 100%. It was... I don't know if there were faxes then. I get facsimiles then. I guess they probably had faxes. But
no,
it was constant. You had to deliver documents and paperwork and drafts and photos all hours of the day from business to business, from office, you know, law office to courtroom. Mm-hmm. It was essential to the workings of downtown San Francisco and every downtown.
This is great, Chloe, because I don't think that, just the way that things have shaken out, I don't think we've really, in 6 years of doing this podcast, I don't think we've really talked about San Francisco Bike Messenger culture.
I'm sure there's people here that would love to talk about their heyday as, like, it was intense. Yeah. Like, I, again, lasted very briefly, wiped out probably a dozen times in my first week on the tracks, on, like, Muni tracks.
That's
and
your
got caught
rite of
in,
passage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, and anyway, so upon meeting Lenny Breedlove, Lenny said, go down to the Bearded Lady Cafe, which was opening possibly that week.
Okay.
In probably, I think it was 1990, maybe 1991.
Okay.
Went down, checked out the Bearded Lady. Immediately, you know, there was Silas Howard, at the time nicknamed Flipper. There was Harry Dodge. There was Lori Hartman, Judith Moment. It was just already a cool, established kind of queer little hub that I walked into, and I just thought, this is the coolest thing ever.
Okay.
I will be back next weekend.
How long after you moved here was this?
I moved a week later.
Okay.
I came down, and I'm like, I'll be right back. Let me get some stuff.
Right, I need my things.
So that was it.
Wow.
So I went back and drove down my little, like, Toyota Tercel.
Yeah.
Loaded with whatever I had, which seemed easy, and got a room for $200, $250 in, like, Leslie Ma's. There was a place in Leslie Ma's house. Mm-hmm. I think actually I stayed with someone for the first couple weeks until a room opened up.
Right. And where, like, what neighborhoods are we talking about?
Mission. It was Mission.
14,
yeah, actually I did. I stayed on the in Maria's house flat on 14th between, like, I think it was Guerrero and Valencia.
Okay.
Where the Bearded Lady was, or maybe one block. Oh, I think it may be even Valencia and Mission. Anyway, and then I moved up to 22nd Valencia.
Okay.
To Leslie Ma's flat.
Okay.
Had a little room there for maybe $300 or something.
Right.
You know. From there, I think I got my own place and brought some friends in on Lower Haight, Pierce and Haight.
Okay.
Pierce Street and Haight.
Yep.
Went from there to, I don't remember where I ended up after that.
You brought friends from here or from, did you bring friends from Portland?
You know, actually, until recently, I'd forgotten how many of my friends in Portland ended up here.
Right.
It was just like a flood, like open door. Like, it just was leaking friends down. I came down.
And it started with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if it was coincidence. I think I kind of just uncovered something, and, like, you know, word, I was like, my closest friend Tanya moved down. Mm-hmm. Her sister Ty moved down. Asia and Shanna moved down. Asia and Shanna actually, so I met all of Tribe 8, the band.
Oh, yeah.
Dyke band down here. They were touring, and somehow, again, we all reminisce about, like, or think about, how did we communicate with each other? How did I...
Yeah.
Did I send you a letter that said, this band is coming on tour, a Northwest tour, on Thursday, this day, go check them out? Like, I don't remember.
Well,
I guess we just dialed the phone.
Maximum Rock and Roll. That was one way. Like, monthly zines and magazines. I know, for me, the thing I'm like, how the hell did I ever buy airplane tickets?
I know. So I told Asia and Shanna, close friends from up there, Jenny B, that were this cool band was coming by. Go check them out. They did. Hopped in the van for, like, a few more states. Went to Seattle. And, like, just kind of joined in.
Yeah.
And then, like, they moved down the next week or something.
Brilliant.
So it was this kind of growing, you know, accumulating people from nearby cities and states and towns.
And then were you also making, I'm sure you're making friends here too.
Of course. Yeah. So, like, so I immediately, the circles kept growing and merging and growing and merging. And, you know, when I look back at negatives today, there, I picture it like there were concentric circles of people. So I had my closest. Everyone knew each other by, you know, in spokes of familiarity or events or just the queer scene. But but, you know, my closest people. Then a level beyond that of friends that I didn't see every day, or not even every day, but people maybe who I didn't live with. And then beyond that, a lot of faces I knew that I didn't know the name. And it just kept going because I look at these photos and I have to, you know, send a quick thumbnail to someone, Cooper Lee Bombardier, who's like absolutely remembers the first name, last name, birthday, and star sign, you know, like astrological details of every photo I send. Thank God.
What they call metadata now.
It's a, it's like exactly.
A person knew that stuff.
And I'm like, who was that? I know them, but I can't put my finger on like anything else about them. So thank God for Cooper, who's, you know, becoming the human family tree reference.
I love it.
But it was vast. So, you know, it was just really a large and growing community. The community kind of exploded, I feel like, grew and grew and grew mid-90s, late-90s, and then, you know, after that, I don't know. It slowly dissipated, people grew up, changed, priced out.
I was going to say,
lots of
the
reasons.
City changed.
The city
too.
Changed. You know, there's still a lot going on, and there continued to be, but a lot of the businesses that were single-handedly kept alive and thriving and funded by this massive community began to close as it shrunk as we knew it. It grew in other ways, but the, you know, the world that we knew was kind of beginning to close.
Fall in on itself.
Fall in on itself a little bit.
Did you, before you came here, so there's coming here and then shortly after that you moved here, but before you came here, did, like, were you already aware of your sexuality? Or?
Yeah, so I was
and did you find
in the Portland
communities in other places? Or?
Portland, just in Portland. So I came out in Portland, and at Portland State I was taking women's studies, and, you know, of course, with women's studies comes, like, every, you know, brings out the feminists and the all the dykes and queers and everything. So there was a good group, a good community there.
But then compared to what you found
relatable to me
here.
Very different.
Not night and day, maybe, but like.
Not night and day, because also many people came down that that were, you know, good friends and ended up also connecting more to the San Francisco scene,
Got it.
At the time and at that time of life. But there certainly was, you know, it was still West Coast. It was still cool stuff going on. And there was certainly, it wasn't like coming from, I don't know, middle of nowhere by any means. So it was all, it was comfortable. And, but again, coming to San Francisco, it was like my people. It was gritty. It, it felt like what I most just related to and felt like I've arrived, and it
creative,
felt like
creative, expressive, supportive. Like there's an almost like an queer infrastructure. Almost,
and
right?
Raw and urban.
Yeah.
And the urban aspect is what drew me in.
That was Chloe Sherman. On the next episode of Storied San Francisco, hear Chloe talk more about her photography, which, perhaps unlike any other artist, captures that SF dyke scene of the 90s. Part 2 drops next Tuesday, wherever you get podcasts. Music for Storied San Francisco was produced, performed, and curated by Otis McDonald. Aaron Lim of Bitch Talk Podcast is our contributing producer. And the show is produced and hosted by me, Jeff Hunt. Now in our sixth season, we have more than 200 episodes available on our website, storiedsf.com, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're able to, please rate and review the show, and drop us a line at storiedsf@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Keep rejecting those silly doom loop narratives about our city. Stay wacky, weird, healthy, and creative. And we'll see you next time on Storied San Francisco. We acknowledge and respect the first humans of the unceded land we call San Francisco, the Ramaytush Ohlone. We condemn the genocide of these and other tribes across the Western Hemisphere. We honor their legacy and history, and we support rematriation and sovereignty efforts.
This podcast is a proud member of the BFF.fm podcast network. Learn more at podcasts.bff.fm.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.